Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Arc of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We are so glad that you are here. This Super Soul Super Bowl Sunday, we are here in Eastern Washington State, and our AccuWindow forecast says snow. Snow is everywhere. If you live in the United States, it's about snow two-thirds of the country. We are going to have our phone lines open all night tonight, and as you pile on as the fate of the New York Giants becomes evident, you can reach us at 888-228-4494 anywhere in the United States or Canada. And Canada, you have your own toll-free number. You can reach us at 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on Earth, on planet, off planet, inside the planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185 or 530-776-9916. And if you're using Skype, you can reach us at BBS Radio. And if you're using PalTalk, you can simply reach us at bbsradio_com. The solar wind started out a medium 423 kilometers a second this morning, but right now it is blazing at 608 kilometers per second. We moved into the middle of a strong solar wind coming from a coronal hole from the sun facing Earth. Sunspot 982 is large, and it has two amazing wings of magnetism coming off of it right now. But unlike those of 2 weeks ago, this one is equatorial and forward polarized and thus poses little threat for solar flares, but we'll keep you posted. All you have to do is go to x2-radio.com and check it out. We'll keep you posted on those solar flares. You know, we are entering a new solar cycle, number 24, and it promises to ramp up quickly. Solar flares should reach X class by summer. We'll keep you posted on that. And if you got out early this week before dawn, you saw Jupiter and Venus very close together. These are very cool to watch and can be seen with some detail through an ordinary pair of binoculars, if you don't have a telescope. The trick, of course, is holding them still enough, but with a little PVC pipe and a lawn chair, you could easily build yourself a bracket to hold your binoculars and spend hours planet gazing. Try it out. Inexpensive way to teach your kids about two of the great planets in our solar system. Also, the space shuttle Atlantis has cleared all tests. They finally solved those pesky engine control problems. It's set to take off February 7th. We'll keep you posted on the news of the mission. I know it's kind of old hat, but I can tell you if I had a chance to go up in a shuttle, I'd be there yesterday. Always wanted to see a launch, and may yet, before the end of the flights of the shuttle, get my way down to Florida and watch one. Last week, we had open lines and talked about the discoveries of the William Henry venture to Egypt. And this week, we are privileged to have the inventor of the Lifestream Generator and the owner of Zero Point Research, John Riley, with us. He is formerly with Lockheed Skunk Works and ran a very successful special effects group in Hollywood. His quick thinking and amazing engineering has been applied to the field of new energy for the past few years and has produced one of the most amazing energy experiences I have ever seen. Please welcome with me John Riley. How are you, John?
I'm very good, Brooks. Thanks. It's an incredible pleasure to be here tonight.
Well, I know you're coming to us from Santa Monica, California.
Yes.
And I know the town is nice and quiet, at least the streets are, because everyone is in watching the Super Bowl. And there may be a lot of listeners out there doing that right now, too, going, oh, gosh, we don't want to listen to X-Squared Radio. We want to see what Tom Brady's going to do with the pigskin. Well, I have a feeling at halftime the main entertainment will be commercials. I like the commercials myself. That's the main reason I watch the Super Bowl. But we're glad you're on the air with us, and this will be the talk of the water coolers on Monday morning when the archives go up. John, we have spoken before on and off the air a lot, and we've worked together, and I have never asked you about your path to new energy. When you were in engineering for someone else, how did you become aware of the design for the forms of energy you now use in your technology?
Well, that is a very good structured question that could take me. I can either do this in the simplest approach or I can go back about 25 years. But one of the things that I had the privilege to when I was back in the Skunk Works is that I had a very unusual device that I had privilege to, and it was actually a generator, not unlike what we currently use, but the special that this particular generator had, it had an adjustable frequency control as well as a voltage control. So I was able to adjust the frequency or the hertz of the actual alternating current energy that was generated from anywhere from 20 hertz all the way up to 800 hertz or 800 cycles. So it was really interesting when I used to do some side experiments to really utilize those harmonics or the frequencies that are actually sent down the electrical lines into certain devices that worked. So that really got me started. And then, you know, of course, once I moved out of the Lockheed experience, moved into special effects, we were working with, you know, many majors, A film companies from Spielberg, Cameron, and Bob Zemeckis, you know, working, literally pushing the future on all these technologies. And so I was always on the edge of bringing in, like, the first wave of something new. If I saw something in development, I would want to get a prototype and actually start working with it. That got us our reputation in the industry for being a can-do company. So once I took that and we started really getting to some of the fringe type of films, it really started to really make me think, is this stuff, you know, really in existence? You know, I mean, can we actually achieve it? Because some of the designers really came in, you know, on the visual or on the production design when they were illustrating sets and technological pieces. I was wondering where they were grasping, you know, the layouts and how they were putting these things, you know, together. And I always asked them. They said, well, it just kind of comes to me. I said, okay, but you have all the principles here, you know, and so that was actually a really good eye-opener for me. And then I did a major transition from the industry where actually I took a sabbatical, closed my company, and merged into the production aspect of filmmaking, where actually I did a couple films and then moved into the post-production aspect of the films and then spun another company. And then from that is where I would have to say is once I sat stagnant for about 2 years, not really working with my hands or working with my mind in the technological aspects, I started to go a little, I guess, crazy inside myself to get back out. And all of a sudden, yeah. You know, and, you know, we talked about this before where I had the DVD company and one of my clients, it was a new client, they were going to try me out, and they handed me William Henry's Cloak of the Illuminati to put on DVD. And so I took that under my own wing, and, you know, while I was authoring this, I'm looking at these ancient symbols that all of a sudden is being brought forth once again, and it just started literally sparking things in my mind again. And I couldn't really sit still anymore. I had this quest, you know, to work on technology again. So I was really driven from these codes or symbols that I would like to say that William, you know, was. I always hold him, you know, partially responsible for my activation. And so we always get a laugh out of that, you know, because I point my finger at him. And so it's always funny. But then taking that knowledge and, you know, starting to do exploration and looking at alternative energy and really being focused on it, then really taking the step into alternative science, which was really the awakening for me when I ran across a lot of people that were working with cellular resonance, you know, understanding different principles and the human connection to energy, and also our, you know, in-depth understanding to energy that's emitted from the planet itself. So that really, you know, took me back over 100 years to Nikola Tesla. And, of course, you know, once I explored the aspects, I just kept going deeper and found his radiant energy research that he started in 1899 to approximately 1923. And that was the clincher for me. That's why I started to come into a higher understanding of what Nikola Tesla was trying to bring forward on the planet. And it was really a major paradigm shift for me in regards to seeing, completely different in my way of thinking and the technical training I was taught. And, Nikola himself really went outside the box to create what we call radiant energy. It actually went against normal methods of producing electricity. And that's the reason why he had some amazing results. He was able to, you know, wirelessly transmit electricity, you know, broadly, you know, and he was able to focus it. And so he did some pretty major experiments, which was really an eye-opener. But I stumbled onto some of his earlier research where he had a connection where he was able to create an etheric energy that literally collected just about on anything. And anything metal would hold this energy. And if it was like a vase or a jar, it would literally be like a capacitor or a bell jar, and it would literally discharge an enormous amount of energy if you got anywhere near it. So this was really fascinating research for me, and I said, well, I really want to take these principles further. And then once I crossed the Nikola Tesla technology with a structure out in Landers, California called the Integratron, that was literally the clinching point for me. George Van Tassel was working on this structure for approximately 28 years, if I recall, and he actually called it a cellular rejuvenator. And also a time machine. So I found this really interesting that he was calling it a cellular rejuvenator and time machine. And I was really trying to understand what he meant by the time machine aspect. But the cellular rejuvenation, once he claimed that he wasn't going to use any man-made technology, it was all going to be earth energies that were going to generate this effect inside the Integratron really got me thinking. And I looked at, you know, I went out there, and I brought a handful of gentlemen with me, engineers and, anywhere from a lawyer to real estate, you know, to really look at the principles and the property out there. And we did this incredible walkthrough. And once we came through after about six hours later, we were all on the same page of its theory of operation. But he had what was called a Wimhurst or a Dirod array that was actually a static generator, and he had this really unique structure of these dirods that were on an air platform. And all he would use was a compressor and send air into this dirod array, and it would literally lift and turn on a bed of air, and then through the movement of that, it would create a static discharge, and that's what we would call the primary. That would be the kickstart of the energy producing for the Integratron. And then he went through a level of the Tesla coil technology, which would increase the voltage of the static electricity exponentially. So a lot of people called it a static generator. And a lot of the people that have walked through, the scientists and physicists, all say, yeah, it's just a static generator. But I said, well, you guys didn't really look further of what he was doing, because he's got these earth rods that are also part of the mix, too. He says, yeah, well, we don't know what he was doing there. I go, well, why don't we focus on that? I said, he was actually getting it to the point where he actually was able to produce or raise an etherical energy, very similar to what would be considered radiant energy. We have to give it a name, you know, because, again, like one of the things that I was always looking at is what is the name of electricity. I mean, if it was produced before the last 110 years on this planet, you know, was there actually a given name for it? So I didn't have that information at the time of this research, but I do now. This is when we start, you know, the further back I keep going, I went back 100 years to create, you know, to bring this technology forward, but then we started going back 1,000 years, we started going back 5,000 years, we started realizing that there was energy being produced, you know, for centuries.
Well, that's really interesting. You and I both know William Henry. In fact, that's how we got to know you, is he said, you've got to meet this guy named John Riley. And so that was part of the iterations for me and my career as well. But the interesting thing is that William and those people that know William Henry know he is a magnificent Egyptian mythologist. But he's not want to get too caught up in the metaphysical part of it. He's more of a factual reporter, more of an observer, and he notices patterns and things that other people don't notice, and he reports them. Now, the interesting thing is that he discovers these structures that evidently were built anciently, way, way back in the time of Seti in the 16th Egyptian dynasty, and he copied them down and said, this is really strange. What in the world is this structure? And you saw it in one of the videos that you were, duplicating and sending out for him, and this icon sort of sparked your engineering genes again, and it activated, you know. It's kind of ironic because, you know, not many people would think that William Henry could metaphysically activate anyone, because he's so slow to get activated. But it's really interesting how that fell together. And when you say 5,000 years ago, you literally mean it. And then, you know, later discoveries in Tibet, where their researchers, their engineers, their gross national product was expended for an amazing structure that looks alarmingly like a Tesla coil, except it's 1,300 years before Tesla invented his. Now, the interesting thing about Tesla and the interesting thing about you is that the designs for what you have and the designs for what Tesla had don't exist anywhere. They sort of come to you like, it's very difficult to explain. Why don't you explain how these icons turned you on and clicked lights on inside of you that started you designing?
Well, that takes us a little further down the rabbit hole, you know, in regards to the way that my research does come and how we apply. But when we all, you know, understand, you know, the level of our conscious thinking, this is something that really is, you know, if we really go and really focus on it, we realize how the mind is constantly processing and bringing in information. And all of a sudden, we can just have a thought, and this thought will create a complete structure. And it's there almost in a nanosecond within our minds. And so we're like, you know, sometimes I would sit there, you know, in my industry times and producing and always constantly coming up with, like, clever, you know, short stories to produce, you know, and to create them. And all of a sudden I'd be sitting there and this entire story would just be there, you know, complete, front, middle, and back. And I'm like, well, that would make a great story. But, it, you know, it wasn't anything linear. It was just immediate. So I wanted to use that, you know, when we talk about the creative process. And, of course, then we ask, well, how in the heck did that just drop in my head? You know, so when I got to that point of thinking, and then when we all realize that our minds do work on that process, takes us into the level of what we consider consciousness, and then moving into the super consciousness. Now, we can go into many levels of research and understanding, everything from remote viewing to ESP, you know, all different levels of research, knowing that there are frequencies that the mind operate on that are broadcasting, you know, constantly.
Where I think I wanted to go with this is a lot of people, let's just talk about the ancient Tibetans who were meditating and trying to concentrate on how to open and manipulate stargates. The Egyptians, obviously Seti, really concerned with how to move maybe his physical being or his spiritual being through the underworld and back into maybe toggle between worlds, as William puts it. And then you, who get this whole design in your head from raw cloth, develop the live stream technology. What I'm saying is that this story, this design, this technology, the form of energy came to all three generations, and each of them interpreted that different and used their hands and their local technology or the technology at hand, or maybe develop new technology to bring that to reality. But a lot of people get that idea. It's just not many people, in fact, darn few people, actually make it happen. So what I really want to know is, what is that drive that wakes you up in the middle of the night with this idea? Do you just blow it off and say, oh, gee, yeah, but I got to make a living? Or do you say, now I see that. I see how it works, and I see what it can be used for.
Yes, no, you're actually correct in the way that you just explained it. I was about 30 seconds away from getting to exactly what we're going to talk about now. But of course, one of the things that I, you know, once I became and what's called an inventor, and I realized that I created a device that has an amazing effect and connection to our higher level understanding and us tapping into a new level of technology, I had to really look at that. I had to really think about it. I had to look at it from every single aspect of where my life was, and then also what this can do if it moves, you know, into the world. And so, you know, that is something that an inventor has to really contemplate all the time, you know, because you immediately, or you take your prototype and you'll move it out there and you'll look for the biggest check, you know, and try to get it into production. There are many ways where you can look at it and say, how can I get this across the world where it's going to do its best, you know, for the people and for
right,
the planet.
Right.
So these are the, and I always believed in playing scenarios out, always in my mind. I would play something out 75 to 150 times before I would act on it, just so I played out all the scenarios of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, something in regards to, I like to coin a, you know, the phrase, with great power comes great responsibility. And when you're given that, we have to be very responsible for what we do to it. You know, because there's always a positive effect to any technology that's out there, and there's always a negative effect to any technology that's out there. And that applies on anything that's out today. You know, so when we really understand the levels of responsibility, we sit down in a conscious think tank and we say, how do we move this forward, and, you know, for the betterment you know, of mankind, for the betterment of the planet. You know, so this is something I contemplate in my work every single day.
Right, but you have what is rare, and that is you have the experience, you have the work experience. I'm kind of reminded of, I don't want to really stretch way out there, but the Steven Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when Richard Dreyfuss is just being driven nuts with this image, this icon that's in his mind, and he draws and he paints, and then he starts using mashed potatoes, and then he uses the mud and bushes from his own yard, and he finally gets the connection of what it is. And it, toward the end of the movie, only a handful of people actually made it to Colorado. They followed their drive, and they overcame all obstacles to get to that point. Only a handful, but only one made it to the top.
Exactly.
So,
absolutely. We forget that sometimes when we look deep into that script, that hundreds were activated, and only two made it. You know, and then he was the last one, you know, Devil's Tower, Wyoming. And again, when we look at the, you know, the symbolism, when everyone saw that, however they got it in the newspaper, in the news, you know, or driving by, they got activated. You know, so now, you know, Steven Spielberg plays a very intricate role, you know, into, if you really look at a lot of the films that he does, he's an activator. You know, I mean, he literally brings us, you know, pushes us out of our boxes to think beyond what we have been brought up into and what the structure is. So all of a sudden, that one person, we see this one man's triumph and his obsession or drive to, you know, to get there, and then we see the final result, the reason why. You know, so it really makes us all think, because I grew up, you know, of course, you know, with the Spielberg films at hand constantly in my mind. I can't really think of much of a time where I wasn't influenced by these films. So it really makes it very interesting, and of course it was an absolute honor to be working on these films with him. So that was a real interesting crossover for me in my life.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And so you saw, you know, the work that was behind the cellulose and all the things that ended up on the cutting room floor that were great ideas, but somehow this director had a plan of what he wanted to come off the screen to people in that chair. Sure, he wanted to make it entertaining, of course. And he had John Williams for music. I mean, how could you go wrong there? But the storyline, the idea that some communication between an off-world race or maybe not an off-world race, maybe another race that used to live here, it's hard to tell, and us resulted in well, it had results. People actually acted on it. And some people, in fact, most people, were asleep. They didn't get it. They didn't listen. It didn't resonate with them. And this is really the core of invention. I did a short biography on four mathematicians, and as I was doing research on them, I really didn't expect to find this, not with mathematicians anyway, maybe with a musician, but not with a mathematician. They all talked about dreams that they had, daydreams that they had, where new math, I'm not talking about derivations, I'm talking about new formulas, new mathematical relationships that were just dropped into their brain. And because they had the previous training, or at least a propensity to think mathematically, they got it, they understood it, and they took mathematics to a new level. And that happens every single day in this world. Some people act on it, some people don't, and some people never get it.
That's very true. Well, when Nikola Tesla talked, you know, himself, I mean, he was completely developed. All his technologies were complete within his mind, and all he had to do from that point was just three-dimensionalize it, build it. You know, but before I really did so much research on Nikola Tesla and others like him, I did the same thing in the motion picture industry, where I had to develop technological circuits, and I would literally, you know, like go home with these thoughts in my head, and I'd put the circuits together. And, you know, just before I went to sleep, I said, okay, that's how I'll build it. And the next morning, I'd wake up, I'd go into the office, and I'd start building it. Sometimes some of my employees or the clients would come over and see this massive circuit board, you know, with just all these components, and they're like, they look at it, and they go, where's the schematic?
Yeah,
and I go, it's in my head. And they're like, you're kidding. You know, they're just like, they can't believe that I'm pulling this out of my head. They go, "You, what are you using as a reference?" I said, "It's all in my head. I'm just bringing it out. I built this thing in my head, now I'm bringing it out." And they're like, they couldn't believe it, you know, and then we'd put it in and the thing would work perfectly, you know.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
Yeah, you know, it is a wonderful, once we realize that, you know, because I always thought almost everyone had that gift until I really stepped into the industry, because the, working in the Skunk Works, you know, you're given something and it's just, they give you the result or they tell you what they want. Now, when I went into the industry, we were, the one movie I can really remember was Back to the Future 2, when Bob Zemeckis wanted 30-year in the future technology. I mean, tangible stuff. This is before visual effects could do it, you know, CG, you know, on the high level. So when we were looking at that, and he was looking all over, and he had this best special effects people, you know, and they were given the illustrations, and they were going, well, this is the best we can do. And he goes, that's not good enough. I needed to do this. And so he kept putting it out there, and they stumbled upon me and my little hole in the wall back then in the late 80s, and they just said, oh, by the way, can you do this? And I'm like looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, I think that's possible. And they go, you sure? Because the best effects guys say it's not. And I go, well, give me a couple days to really, you know, work through it. So by the time they called me, I said, yeah, it can be done. And they kept saying, are you sure? And I go, yes. They go, well, can you do it in 8 weeks? I'm like, ooh, yeah, okay. And they go, well, is it going to be expensive? I went, yes. You know, and they said, well, if you can do it, we'll pay for it. And we brought it forward. You know, I mean, we were able to pull it off, and Bob Zemeckis was just ecstatic, came up and just congratulated us. And I didn't realize Steven Spielberg was 7 feet away when he did that. And I got the nod from Steven Spielberg. So that was, it never got any better than that. You know, in the industry,
yeah.
That was it.
Really?
You know, so, yeah, there was nothing that ever was a better moment, you know, so, but I always have that one, which is great, so. But it was just, it showed us that, and if we look at it, if we really look at the way the human mind thinks, all we have to do is see it. All we have to do is create it, and then we can manifest it. And this is really amazing, because it's like, I mean, if you get a person, if you sit a bunch of people in the room and you hand this design to someone, they go, can you build it? They go, well, I don't know how to do that. What do? We go to the next guy. And we go to the next guy until eventually we find someone who says, yeah, I think we could pull that off. You know, but then there's a creation process that happens, and it's just amazing. You know, all we have to do is get that visualization in our mind and believe we can build it, and it's there. You know, so this is really, you know, been an interesting process for me. Is that, especially in the industry, we were known as a can-do company. We never said no to anything. You know, I mean, we never turned down a job. You know,
when it gets down to it, who wants to do something that's been done before?
Well, sure, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's always, especially in the industry, it's, you know, on the visual effects, everybody wants the next level. Every film comes out, everyone's expecting of that. So you always have to bring it to the next level. Yeah, so
tell you that there are a lot of filmmakers that are sorry that John Reilly and his group are not doing special effects in the movies anymore.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that, but I did segue at the perfect time because you know, everything went from practical, you know, to the CGI aspect. So I knew either we're going to have to, you know, change all the machining equipment to you know, high speed computers, you know, and stay with that. Or venture out. So I think I really feel, actually, I know that I made the right decision and to move into alternative energy and science.
Sure, sure.
And it's so gratifying. Every day I'm just so grateful of what I'm doing.
I happened to cruise into the Star Trek marathon today, and I'm talking about the newest one that's out. And I was on it for 4 or 5 minutes or something like that, and some reptilian alien was taking over the ship, two or three of them, and they had the corniest Walmart ray guns I've ever seen, and I thought, oh, man, no, I just know John Reilly and his group could have given these guys some really cool ray guns to come on the bridge of the Enterprise with. I mean, these things look like the old little, you remember the little disc guns that used to fire little discs before choking hazards robbed us of all the great toys?
Well, some of the designers have fun. They actually literally go out and they get that stuff as a joke and then dollop it up, you know, put really unique paints on them. And we go on the sets and we see these things and we all get a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
You know, because they're just like, you know, a new alien race. They're not, you know, they're not going to be there forever, so they just grab whatever they can to do it. But are you talking about Star Trek Enterprise?
Yeah, Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, we actually, yeah, we did work on that show. We did the spacesuits, if you remember those. Jump around. Yeah, we really loved working on those.
Cool.
Yeah,
I just expected if he pulled the trigger, I really didn't want him to because it looked like a marshmallow was going to come out the end of his gun. It's just that corny looking. It kind of retroed me back to Flash Gordon when they used to pull a revolver on Mars and shoot at the aliens. So you know we're nearing the bottom of the first hour. Actually, we have about 16-17 minutes in the first hour, and I want to. Make sure that everyone knows certainly that they can call in. I think the fate of the Super Bowl is about sewn up by now. So in anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, you can call us at 888-228-4494. Those phone lines are open. People are sitting in the studio right now. In Canada, 877-489-6350. And anywhere else on Earth, on planet, off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us. 530-776-5154 or 5185 or 530-776-9916 or if you're using Skype, you can reach us at BBS Radio or PalTalk, you can reach us at BBSRadio_com. And don't forget, we will be starting up in our second hour the Instant Messenger, so you can reach us at AOL Instant Messenger if you want to. Now, as we make the transition from, engineering is engineering to some respect. I mean, we're always doing things that have never been done before. I myself am up here in Washington State working on the state's first biodiesel plant. Now, there are several wannabes up here, and many have tried and not made it, and there are some that are refining in some form or another. But this plant is the first of its kind, and it's going to be amazing to watch it run. For 30 years or so, I engineered for the manufacturing industry for automotive, but I got tired of that. Making cars just didn't turn me on anymore. At what point did John Reilly say, making special effects of the movies or building rockets or doing a movie production, although that is, the work of Hollywood, as it were, in the area that you live, at what point did you say, this icon is really turning me on to something that's in my mind and I've got the ability and I've got the tools, I feel called to do something in energy? How did you know what to do in energy? How did you know what direction to go?
Well, the first wave, when I really look back at it, it wasn't really something that I was 100% directed to do, because we were always creating new fringe technology, and one of the things that I could have literally patented, during my time in the industry, about 35, cutting-edge technologies that we had, of course, or the studio money and, thousands upon thousands of dollars, invested on, brand new prototype level technologies. And after they were filmed, they'd get tossed in the trash. I mean, it was completely wasted. And of course, if I, had a, much bigger, level, in our company, I would have literally had a patenting division after we were done with these technologies and moved them forward. But we didn't, because we always had to move on to the next film, or the next TV show. So it was, we had these big bins of all these prototype technologies or things that were applied. So taking that work and then moving out of the industry and then sitting for a couple of years and then coming up with new concepts, in post-production or DVD, that's, again, and then that level of reactivation or moving back into technology. That's when I started noticing that there was like the human Earth connection and this level of energy that was kind of considered a mystery. And, of course, we're very familiar with the last 100 or so odd years the planet has been utilizing what we call alternating current or direct current. So when we go back 100 years, when they called it the current wars, when there was a battle over AC versus DC, And this is really interesting, you know, to see this, because they were trying to wire the world, and DC was a poor traveler of electricity. Alternating current would go for hundreds of miles without any loss. You know, so in the long run, it won out. But then 23 years later, this was really interesting that a lot of people don't know this, is Nikola Tesla, the creator of alternating current, literally came forward, you know, to industry, and he said, well, we really should change this. And everyone's like saying, why? He says, well, because it's, you know, after further research, it's not really harmonious to us as humans or as the planet. And they're like, okay, I think it's time for you to retire. You know, they didn't want to hear that because they already had the structure implemented. You know, I mean, if anybody all of a sudden, you know, came up with the technology today, you know, and said, oh, here, this will replace all the power lines, you know, there's an infrastructure, and it's not going to be, you know, it's going to fall on deaf ears, if you know what I mean. And it's too drastic a shift of the paradigm because we have so much that's involved, and a lot of people don't realize, well, we've got 100 years invested into wiring the world. You know, so this
well,
is like,
yeah, we have 100 years invested in wiring a grid, as it were. And when,
a grid,
when you
yeah.
look at when you look at Earth from space, it's lit up, to be sure, but it's lit up along the pathway of the wires that the industry has laid.
Yeah.
And where there are no wires, there's no lights. And where there are no lights, there are no people. So in a sense, the power distribution industry has determined where people can live.
Yes. Yeah, there was, there, of course, the overall vision at that particular time. It was very selective. Now, you know, we're seeing the small shift in the paradigm, and one of the things that a lot of people, you know, want, I hear this all the time, is a lot of people say, we got to do something. We got to break off the grid. We got to make changes. And they go, well, those changes are happening. And they go, well, I don't see them. I go, right, you don't see them, but they are happening. I said, there is something that's been amazingly happening, you know, for the last 10 years on this planet where independents are rising and coming up with some very brilliant, unique, off-the-grid technologies. Now, I'll use one example is electric cars. We saw the automotive companies come up with electric cars, and then they just vanished. And, you know, that happened, you know, two times in our era of automobiles. You know, when cars were first created, there were so many electric cars, and there were electric delivery trucks. You know, and it was amazing. The more research you do, I have books that have these incredible vehicles that were made that ran on electricity, and they had inductor stations. They just had to drive up, and through induction, they would charge. You don't even have to plug them in. You know, and then they take off, and they go another 30 miles and come back and charge up again, or whatever the distance was. So here we had. Here
was
we had
it really, was it really conspiracy, though, that took the electric cars off the road, or was it the lack of battery technology, or was it just lack of public support?
Well, it was a combination of many things. The conspiracy aspect, you know, I don't see it from that point, because when we talk about fossil fuels being in abundance, you know, and it was the most, you know, cost-effective way to go. I mean, when, you know, Rudolf Diesel himself created the diesel engine, you know, he didn't have diesel fuel at the time. He ran the first engine on peanut oil, you know, but then after a while, diesel fuel came forward. It was cheap, it was effective, and it was in abundance. So it replaced the making of these inefficient, you know, battery technologies, and, you know, and we were able to get, you know, I mean, when you have an electric vehicle that goes 30 to 50 miles on a charge, and then you have a gasoline-powered vehicle that'll go 250 miles on a tank, well, which one's going to win out? You know, so it's just more of a convenience. And we are, you know, when we do our shopping, you know, we drive, you know, we look around and we look at the comparisons, and we go, well, this one gets a lot more on a tank of gas, and it gets a lot more, you know, per gallon. So we really start to focus more on those these days more than ever. You know, so that's, again, that's, right now, you know, the fossil fuels really still holds that, you know, as being the most convenient because it's in abundance. It's being processed all over the world. But now when we're looking at new technologies, you know, because I do my own research. I go to the Eco Expos or the Alternative Car Expos. And just last year when I went, there was like a about a dozen small electric vehicles being offered to the public. And this year there's over three times the amount of new electric vehicles that are coming out. And then next year, you know, we're looking at about 150 to 200 different choices of electric-type vehicles that are going to be available to us, that are being made by independents, you know, that are spreading, you know, all over the place. And, you know, a lot of people, especially like us, you know, here, we're very green-thinking here in Santa Monica. We only need little commuter vehicles, you know, vehicles that'll get us to and fro work. You know, we go, you know, 10, 15, 30 miles back and forth. So, I mean, if you can have an electric vehicle that does that, you know, then, you know, I mean, it just makes sense. You know, I mean, if you're towing a lot of stuff.
You don't really have, you know, sub-zero weather, so you don't have to run a heater a lot of the year. And most people, you know, don't drive long distances in the dark, so you don't have to run headlights for 6 or 7 hours at a time. So there's a lot of advantage to these electric vehicles. So there is a market out there now that oil is at $100 a barrel. We look at biodiesel, for instance. Rack diesel is about $3.35 a gallon now, and you know, biodiesel is about $3.35 a gallon. So it makes sense. Plus, the biodiesel makes the diesel engines last about three times longer, and you get about 2.5 times the energy back than it takes to produce the darn stuff. So it's good all the way around, and it will free up refinery space so that the refineries could then switch their concentration to much more profitable liquids like toluene and acetone and on and on and on, all the fibers that make our clothing and polymers that make our tires and plastics and drugs and fertilizers and all kinds of stuff that's made from petroleum products. We can't build any more refineries. There's plenty of oil out there, but there's just not enough refineries to process it all by demand, and so you know, they drive the cost up, and that's become a financial burden for a lot of people. So that's the driver for new energy. But John, you didn't choose to go into the electric car business or the electric airplane business. You mentioned this human-Earth connection. And in our next hour, I really want to get into that and find out how this drove the core design of your technology. But for now, let's get your ideas on what do you think in the next 5 minutes, what do you think the future of this new energy is? Do you think that it's long-lived? Do you think that the economics are there and that people will drive it into the general consumer's garage?
Oh, yes. I mean, you can see this on so many aspects. I mean, when we're talking about that we live in the information age, and now that we have knowledge that is literally dropped at our fingertips, and anything, you know, that we're querying within our minds, any idea or something that we're interested in, we have the power of the Internet to bring it to us within minutes. Now, one of the things utilizing that is that there have been a lot of amazing, you know, transitions that have happened in the human species as well, seeing, you know, those structures that are in place and realizing that there's so many other options. And now, as independents, we can literally step out of those structure boxes and do something about it. So we see some amazing people coming forth with some amazing public technologies. Everything from electric vehicles to biodiesel, you know, algae production. It's just, you know, it's amazing to see that. I mean, and now we're seeing, you know, of course, you know, using the agricultural aspects that we can actually grow our own fuel. And that's actually almost going back to the roots of what diesel, you know, originally did. He used peanuts, you know, to run his engines at first. And now we're almost creating a full circle aspect, and we have that ability, you know, in the independent structure to do this. And that's the reason why you're working with biodiesel, and you're seeing an incredible, you know, company that really came up with a unique aspect of producing and, you know, self-containing, you know, the biodiesel production itself by, you know, either, you know, creating its own feedstock and then creating it like a zero waste process in the aspect. You know, so it's just amazing to see these things popping up and literally staying, you know, in a structure, being seen by people and actually taking it serious. This is where the change is. It's not, they're not going to disappear. They're going to remain. This is where it gets exciting.
Yeah, it really does. It gets exciting. I knew that if the Internet would stay together for about 10 years, and about, oh, I don't know, 1996, 1997, it started being available to every household as cable modems became more and more popular and people began to get what we call high-speed Internet as opposed to old dial-up. Oh, I don't even want to talk about dial-up. I get hives thinking about it. But the flash of the most incredible information library in the history of the world at the fingertips of everyone. Every 10-year-old with an imagination has access to the most advanced physics in the world. And it was only a matter of time before smart people and information came together. And within 10 years, we have seen a total transformation of our planet. And we are on the threshold of an amazing era of invention and supply and demand and being in touch with what the consumer wants rather than what industry puts on the back dock and tries to sell to us.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen this, and, you know, one of these stories I love to tell, and it's really interesting how so many people don't even realize it. And I say, do you recall a couple years ago there was a man, I think his name is Dick Rutan, who actually built his own spacecraft and launched it and went up into space, came back down, refueled it a few days later, and went back up again. And it was called the X Prize. Yeah, it was called the X Prize. And it was a quest for people to break their bounds and to get into space independently. And you know what? He was able to do it. But he wasn't just able to do it with his own money. He was allowed to do it. You know, he was given the airtime to do this, to go into space. So when we look at it from that aspect, that we are not really being governed, we are actually being allowed to break these bounds that we weren't able to do even 10 years ago, if we think about it. Now we're doing it. We're going out into space. And now the X Prize, they have a contest to get to Mars. You know, but one of the things, you know, I mean, when we looked at Rutan's project, I went on the website numerous times, and there was probably about 45 or so different companies with some amazing devices to get into space. Some of them were a little far-fetched, but some of them were brilliant. You know, but Rutan was able to get up there. He did it, you know, and he was able to do it very cost-effectively as well. So it's on. I mean, when we look at it from literally breaking our bounds, that's what I'm saying. Get ready. We've been asking for electric vehicles and alternative fuels. It's coming. You know, there's a mass consciousness happening to bring this stuff forward. So it's just, like I said, it just gets exciting if we really look. You know, we can talk. We can get kind of caught up in the complaining. But then when we really look and say, wow, I can have biodiesel at my doorstep in 3 days. I can run. I can buy an old Mercedes. And with a simple conversion, run it on vegetable oil, run it on biodiesel, you know, and it's there. We just have to, like, really, you know, really go, you know, take a broader look.
It's gone beyond that. I mean, Fiat, which owns a heavy equipment company in this country called New Holland, they made an announcement about 3 months ago that all their vehicles made from 2008 forward will be B100 compliant. In other words, they will run on 100% biodiesel. And all major car companies have now announced plans to release a diesel-powered vehicle. We thought diesel was just dead, that the new fuel management systems for gasoline were going to make diesel obsolete for passenger cars, but that is not the case at all. Diesel in Europe easily gets 40 to 50 miles per gallon, with a lot more horsepower than we see out of our gasoline engines here, with very little or no pollution. So there are a lot of advantages to it, and don't be surprised if the spark plug companies don't start offering a little resistance to that. Well, we're going to take a quick break, about 3.5 minutes, and we'll be back with more with John Riley, owner of Zero Point Research in Santa Monica, California. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, where it's cold and crisp and clear outside. If you happen to get out early in the morning tomorrow morning, make sure you look up in the sky. You'll notice Jupiter and Venus hanging out up there. You can cover both of them with one finger at the end of your arm. Amazing sight. Get out there with some binoculars and have a look at it. Planets are easier to pick up than stars, because stars are a long, long ways away. Planets are pretty close. Also wanted to let you know about Unlocking the Secret, our third book coming out. It is through editing. We have made some picture changes in it recently, primarily because we were able to replace some of the licensed pictures with original pictures, and so it will be going to print this week. And in about 30 days, you'll be able to get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere else. But you'll always be able to get it here at x2-radio.com at the online store. And we also want to let you know that we are broadcasting with the BBS Radio Network internet-wide around the world, and also the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friends down at Kevin Smith's studio. Our phone lines are open. I don't know what the Super Bowl score is, but I have a feeling it's probably in favor of New England. If anybody has an update on that, you can give us a call. It's a lot more important than politics, football, of course. Anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, you can reach us at 888-228-4494. Canada, you also have your own toll-free line at 877-489-6350. Anywhere else, on planet, off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154. 530-776-5185 or 530-776-9916. And those of you that are using the internet for your long distance with Skype, you can reach us at BBS Radio and through PalTalk at BBSRadio_com. I also wanted to give you an update on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Our producer in Hollywood, Emerald Films, is working very closely with a well-known film funder. We should hear something this week on the viability of actually taking the voyage, which many are calling the greatest expedition in history. As you know, last year we won the Genes of Galileo Award with our documentary on the hypothesis that the Earth might be hollow. And our team has devised 13 days worth of experiments, 24 hours a day, to gather information and conduct experiments to prove or disprove that hypothesis. We have a new article coming out with the Tesla tech people this week, and we're in discussions about doing a presentation down there. So if you are interested in that, make sure you get to TeslaTech.com and check out their upcoming conference. Speaking of Tesla Tech, our guest tonight is John Riley. He is the owner of Zero Point Research in Santa Monica, California, and he is the inventor of the Lifestream Generator. The last hour, John mentioned in his discussion a human-Earth connection. And we have researched that a long, long way. In print, we have taken many voyages to distant places on the Earth, and we have seen ancient civilizations speak about this communication between the human being and the planet Earth. It seems that this connection is undeniable, and it is not superstitious. It is not religious. It may be, in fact, energetic. And that's what we're going to talk about this hour, that the birth of this technology that Zero Point Research is bringing forth, this John Riley invention, has a lot to do with the connection of energy to the human biology. And I guess we'll open it there. Are you there, John?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's see if we can give 55 minutes of short physics lesson combined with advanced molecular biology, and we'll see if how many people we can't lose. Oh, I think we have a caller on line two. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Gail from Tennessee. How are you doing tonight, Brooke?
Oh,
I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Oh, I know, I know. And you're a good friend with William Henry, too.
Yes. You know, while you guys were talking about alternative energies and stuff and fuels, I just find it really interesting. And you still have to think that this is probably part of the big game, you know, that the Illuminati play with their little chessboard. And because my father's a big farmer in Kansas, over 3,000 acres, Do you know that the government pays him every year to let that land set idle?
That's
so
funny,
it does not produce crops? It's nothing wrong with that land whatsoever.
Yep, we see a lot of that up here in Washington, too. A lot of wheat land just sits there doing nothing, and they collect a check.
Yes. They're paid not to farm it. And did you know that once you sign into that program with the government, that if you, they are leasing that land from you. You gave up your rights to it. And if you ever are in non-compliance with government protocol on it, they can seize your land. I bet a lot of these farmers don't know that.
Can you ever back out of the program? Can you say, you know what, I'm tired of this. I want to use my land for something else.
No. It's kind of like on your oil and gas leases on farmland and stuff. Those leases are for lifetime of the lease.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Because my dad has some oil rigs that are leased out to oil companies, you know, that do the drilling and stuff. And that's what it's called, a lifetime lease.
Whose lifetime? The lifetime of the farmer or the lifetime of the land?
Lifetime of the land. As long as that entity, that corporation or company that is the drilling company is in existence. But what they usually do is sell is they, you know, someone else comes in and buys it out. So they have perpetual.
That's pretty amazing.
Isn't it?
You have any questions for John?
I do. You know, there's these things that keep circulating around the Internet. It's like the gossip now. What was the, when I was growing up in the 50s, it was the local phone that there was four or five, the party line. You know, everybody could listen into everybody's conversations. And it seems like today now we have the Internet takes place of that, although I'm much more sophisticated. But this little black box that gives free energy keeps coming up all the time. And that there's actually, and this, not only will this type of technology be for running households for electricity and everything else, but would also, same energy can be harnessed for automobiles and everything. Do you know anything about that? And if you do, where do you see the timeline with the protocols on that and the prototype?
Well, yeah, the actual black box that's running around the Internet, there's probably several of them that claim to be free energy devices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that we talk about is that when we use the word free energy, I think it's easier for us to say that it's energy that we do not take from the grid or energy that we do not plug into and recharge. We can grab it from the etheric realm itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we look at that, there are many ways that that can be done. I mean, I do experiments. You know, Tesla did experiments in Colorado Springs where he powered the city, and he also was able to create a grid, you know, of radiant energy and then transmit it, and then he could put light bulbs down into the earth and they would light up with no wires. So the technology has been there, you know, and even in the 70s, you can go on YouTube and punch in free energy or wireless energy, and you'll see some old footage where the government was taking these arrays and sending wireless energy like a mile and a half across these canyons and maintaining 85% to 89% efficiency. You know,
was that with the Tesla towers?
No, this wasn't the Tesla towers. They were actually doing it was called a gallium arsenide array. And they were actually, but there's a lot of it, you know. I mean, there's a lot of research, you know, in regards to wireless energy transmissions or devices. Australia, apparently, they're doing some amazing work down there.
I've heard that lately.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of breakthroughs that, you know, again, it's all about, you know, okay, now that we can do this, how do we implement it, you know, effectively? And this is where it gets tricky, because if I said I had a device, you know, that would, you know, you can power anything 5 feet away from it. You don't need any cords, but it has to plug into the wall or you have to charge it some way. Now, free energy, we can call that solar cells, you know, because we're taking photovoltaic, you know, energy from the sun, you know, and then store it into batteries. And, you know, the bigger the cells are, the more battery power or storage capacity we have, we can store a lot of energy that way, but there still is a cost factor.
Speaking of solar technology, Have you heard about this, I forget what university has developed this now, but it's like a paint-on nanoparticle type solar panels that are a lot cheaper, and they're going to be more cost-effective for the average person out here to do, because, you know, to totally go solar for your home, that's big bucks.
It is big bucks, and it is. It, you know, of course, it's a long-term, you know, investment when we look at it from that aspect. Solar technology, I think South Africa's got a breakthrough technology as well that was, literally increasing 200 to 250% efficiency from a cell. You know, so that, again, we're seeing some amazing breakthroughs on that level as well. You know, again, what we still have, almost with every type of technology that goes into production, we always have the manufacturing or the mass production aspect. It's almost the same thing as, you know, when you bought your first DVD player, you know, you paid several hundred dollars for it, and now you can get it for $69 because they've been mass produced, and there's an infrastructure set up. So we have to, once, and here's what a lot of people don't know, I will have to use this as a reference because it boggled me for a decade, is that I used to go to the consumer electronics shows every year religiously. And when DVDs came out, they announced the single layer and also the multiple layer ones, the dual layer and then the Blu-ray technology. And that technology taunted us for 10 years before they finally released the technology to the consumer. You know, because they had to get all the manufacturers to agree what to deliver first. And, of course, they delivered the single layer first. Because if they would have delivered the seven-layer Blu-ray technology or the five-layer Blu-ray, the first-layer technology would have kind of been worthless. No one would want it. So there's always a control or a paradigm structure that's placed, you know, for technology. And it's always been that way in regards to bringing technologies forward.
Well, and there's another problem with this, too. I mean, these large corporations, if any inventors out here, physicists, you know, all that, they come upon something and they get a working prototype, the next thing you know, you've got these large corporations, the government out trying to buy it, claiming, you know, all this is revolutionary, and we're going to use that, and we're going to, you know, implement that into our manufacturer line, and next thing you know, they buy up the rights to it, you know, the patents, and then they set it on a shelf somewhere. And if these people continue on, there's been a lot of people that have had just absolutely phenomenal breakthroughs that are dead today.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's you're kind of treading into an area that I know a little bit about, and that is high-speed manufacturing and large corporations. In reality, and, of course, we've had an open call for well over 18 months now for any prototype whatsoever in new energy. We've got empty factory floor space right now waiting for any new energy technology. And we've been through well over 100. And there are groups out there that kind of bird dog these things and vet them, as it were, to see if they're real or not. But we have yet to really have a good working prototype come forward. So I know there are lots of rumors out there, and there are lots of people that have taken someone else's idea and called it their own, and then when they realize, oh, gee, that's already patented, you're infringing on the DuPont's patent or GE's patent, well, then, of course, GE has the right to defend their idea. But the idea that there are inventors out there making millions of dollars selling their ideas to large corporations is rumor.
Yeah.
It's not out there.
Oh, no, they come in and buy it up for pennies on the dollar and promise them all kinds of stuff, and they have no intention of using it for the good of humanity.
I don't think so. I don't think that technology gets sold. I think there are small groups out there, and I'm not going to mention any names, but they sufficiently destroy these inventors before they ever get their feet off the ground by just starving them out.
Right.
They just never get their idea out there.
Dr. Eggman, have you ever heard of a gentleman named Marco Rodin?
Sure. I interviewed him on this program. He's the inventor of the Rodin toroidal coil.
Yes. Yes. I watched all of his videos the other day. Absolutely phenomenal.
Great stuff.
It actually, I kind of had an epiphany when the whole principle of how this works, this universal energy part, and I began to think, well, you know, the chakras are like an oscillating vortex. when you think about it, the chakras of the human body. And I can see where this same mathematical schematics could be used to develop instruments, equipment that could heal the bodies, human bodies, through working with the oscillating vortexes of the chakras. I mean, that what he's doing, and then he just wants to give this to humanity. He doesn't want any money from it. And he's frustrated. I talked to him the other day over there in Hawaii. He's actually moving out of the United States. He's looking for somewhere else in another country to go. He's not sure where he's going, but he's leaving. He wouldn't elaborate with me on why, but he sounded pretty upset. And he said he's just not getting anywhere. There's no one that wants to truly help humanity. He says, you know, I've left this for everybody at their feet, and it's up to them to take it and run with it and use it however they can. So what do you have for comment about that, Brooks?
Well, I think I understand this technology. I've never actually seen a working one. I've seen his drawings. I've seen his math. We've talked for 3 hours on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a smart person. He's got a lot of practical designs about him. And I think that his technology is viable. But the idea is, you know, to create a working prototype and get it in the hands of people who could mass produce it and apply it.
Mm-hmm.
Does he actually have a prototype or working unit?
Yeah, he does.
I've never actually seen one, but they say he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's actually, I guess he went to some of the big players with the governments and stuff. Well, that's futile.
Well,
not where I would start.
Gail,
that's
can I play a little scenario out with you?
Mm-hmm.
I do this with people when they feel that that we're caught up in the government structures. I like to as an inventor, when we bring something that has monumental changes. Or that can really do something incredible for the world or the people.
Right.
We have to really look at what we have. Now, I always consider this the test, because one of the things I play out scenarios all the time. Let's say I'll use the automotive company for an example, and I created a technology that would allow engines to run on water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was excited about it. I built a prototype, and I went to one of the big automotive companies, and I said, here, you put this in your vehicles. All vehicles will run on water from this point. Now, there's a lot of scenarios from that point that could happen. They could make me an offer, or they can say we're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can make me an offer and then play me out for a long time until I'm just, financially destitute. Now, realizing that, I would have, whatever the outcome, because if you did sell it to the company, you'd be calling them for 10, 15, 20 years. Hey, when's my technology going to come out into the cars? Oh, we're working on it. We're working on it. We're working to implement it. Well, how come it wasn't out 15 years ago? Now, when we understand paradigms, it's very important to really understand that they're there for so many reasons. Now, I take this to another scenario. Let's play out another one. Now, in my frustration or in my pursuit to get this technology out, I go to an independent, someone that's, a multi-billionaire, ten times over, and he had a bad day, when I was able to pitch, it was actually a good day for me because he was so out of balance, he just lost a bunch of money in oil, and he was looking for something different. And here it just so happens I walk in and I go, hey, I got this device that can revolutionize and get us off of oil. And he looks at it and he goes, this is great. Let's do it. What's it going to take? 5 years and $2.5 trillion. And he goes, let's do it. Let's implement it, but let's do it secretly. So what we do is we go secretly and we develop this technology and we have it all in warehouses. And he announces it publicly. And we're sitting there with a smile on our face, and all of a sudden we make it affordable for everyone.
Uh-huh.
So now this technology is the key word. Everyone's going and getting it, putting it in their cars. Now they're off the grid. They're no longer using fossil fuels. So now, let's say 90, 100, maybe 6 months down the way, I finally give my investor a call, And I go, and they put me through, and I go, hey, did you see CNN today? And he goes, yeah. He goes, I think we're responsible for that. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't expect that we'd have global economic collapse because we didn't think about what we were doing. And now, because all the countries and all our government structures and all the companies that produce fossil fuels are no longer needed. And so we created this huge, collapse throughout the structure. And
we
feel really bad about that.
We're an oil-sucking economy.
Well, but it's part of our economic structure. It's part of our means and our usage. So now all of a sudden we brought something in that drastically changed that. And now we did something we didn't want to do and create global economic collapse. And so now I said, go boy, I wish I could have went back and did that differently. So now playing out that scenario, let's look at it a different way. Now, a wise investor would take that technology and say, okay, I get it. I understand paradigms. So now we create a new device, and we walk into that company, and I go, you put this in each vehicle, you will increase fuel efficiency by 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would probably get their attention. And they go, well, we need to do that. This sounds great. And then we go into testing, and we go into implementation. Or we can play the same scenario out and get that independent, and he would build them, and we'd make them public. We're guaranteeing 20% fuel efficiency. And that's it. So, but then, because we're thinking in a paradigm shift, a slow shift in the paradigm. But what we've done is we sat down and we said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Every 2 years, we're going to create a new and improved model that saves another 20% or 15%. And in an 8 to 10 year span, we are using 80% less fossil fuels in each vehicle. Now, we'd be considered heroes in that aspect, because what have we done? We've allowed the paradigm to slowly shift, and we've reduced the usage of fossil fuels, but we didn't eliminate them.
Okay.
We didn't tear down any structure, and we're cleaning the air in the same way.
But while we're playing out these paradigms, I have to ask: do you think the planet Earth, and at the rate that, as Al Gore says, human caused global warming. I don't believe that for a minute, but I think it's cyclical. But the pollution and stuff that fossil fuel is causing is a real concern, and it is a reality. And do you have that amount of time, I think would be my question, to let that type of a paradigm play out?
Well,
you're talking years of finally getting us off of our bottle of oil.
Well, and if we did it tomorrow, what would we do to ourselves?
Well,
if we were off of oil tomorrow.
The whole economic structure of the planet was the minute they started creating it with the Federal Reserve, the International Monetary Fund, and all that, it was destined for failure to begin with because of greed. At whatever level you want to talk, there's been a lot of greed and a lot of deceitful things go on behind closed doors, which has caused this economic global meltdown. So, I don't think we're going to have to be too concerned about economics. I think we're all going to be starting out from scratch here in the not too far distant future.
Well, there's a lot of, we're looking at a lot of tremendous shifts, a lot of things happening very quickly.
All at the same time.
Yeah, well, going back to what, Brooks and I were talking about earlier about, of course, new electric vehicles, biodiesel companies, independents really getting involved and making the difference to give us the choices. And so that we can literally go out there, we can buy devices that will adapt our cars to run on more efficient fuels or increase the electrical efficiency of our Prius or any other electrical vehicle. These are all happening as we speak. When we look at the events that are happening and bringing a wake-up call to us on this planet that we need to do something, a lot of people woke up with Al Gore. And that's exactly what he intended to do, is to get us all waking up and talking about it. And a lot of people are moving into action.
That's
a guarantee.
That's
true.
There's some underlying
issues also there with that, because that now they're trying to promote some type of a UN international tax, more specifically pointed towards the American consumer, because we consume the most oil on the planet, because of our insatiable thirst for being mobile and traveling all the time.
Well,
we have China coming
around
up right behind us.
Right. Well, we're the slowest to come around. Like Europe put the, if I recall, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Brooks, but they put the 2% biodiesel initiative probably about 8 years ago or 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's correct.
They've been putting biodiesel in their fuel.
Most states have a 2% biodiesel blend mandate, and in the state of Washington, there is a 20% mandate for government vehicles like school buses and barges and, you know, things like that, emergency vehicles. The problem is there's no supply.
Right. Yeah.
There's no supply of biodiesel in the state of Washington to meet that demand, and so they don't have to buy it.
About getting the cart before the horse, huh?
No, that's not it at all. First, in this nation, at least in a capitalistic society, you have to create demand first.
Yeah.
Once you create demand and the pricing structure is there, then entrepreneurs will fill in the gap. Now, government has done a fantastic job, especially the state of Washington, for putting low-interest loans and grants in place so that people with some equity can step in, pick up millions of dollars in low-interest loans and grants, and actually build a biodiesel plant. And that's exactly what's happening here in eastern Washington State. This plant is generally specifically because, of the forward thinking of legislators in the state of Washington.
They're very progressive in Washington. I lived in Seattle for 9 years now. Their government's very progressive.
We're excited about it.
Can you refresh my memory for a minute here real quick? Biodiesel is what?
Biodiesel is using generally non-food oils generated from, say, canola seed or algae.
Okay.
And we transesterify that with an alcohol. It could be methanol, it could be ethanol. A little bit of heat, a little bit of pressure, and a catalyst, and now you have a fuel. And that fuel is about 2% off of what regular diesel fuel is as far as BTUs, but because of its great lubricity and its low-cost production, it competes heads-up with diesel. I mean, diesel engine manufacturers love biodiesel. You can go into any truck stop in America, and you can buy, and you have to now, buy a quart of biodiesel to put in your tank of 50 gallons of diesel fuel. It'll treat 50 gallons because the fuel industries have been asked to take all sulfur out of the diesel fuel, and thus the diesel fuel is very abrasive to engines. It destroys steel engines. So when you add biodiesel to it, it keeps everything moving and keeps everything from wearing out. And that is what biodiesel is. It is not ethanol. It can be piped through pipelines. It's not corrosive. It's not flammable. It has a much higher flash point than regular diesel fuel. It's safe. It's not even considered hazardous. You can dump it out on the ground, and you don't even have to report it.
Well, I certainly like the idea of the biofuel far better than I do ethanol that's made from corn, because that's wiping out our ability to feed the animals on the farm industry. Because we're taking all this corn, and it takes a phenomenal amount of corn to make 1 gallon of this ethanol. It's not cost-effective.
In the Midwest, it's become so bad, what you just said, that they now have a new byline. It's called corn on corn on corn.
Mm-hmm.
These farmers are raising corn crop after crop after crop because the money is so good. And you know what? We tried that before. It's called a dust bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one business that's almost as profitable as farming the corn, and that's supplying silos to store the corn.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, there's not an ethanol plant in the country that's making money because the price of corn is through the roof.
Right, and we're taking that corn and we're you know, using it in the process to make this ethanol, and then it doesn't work. It's just a whole broken series, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't work.
Well, it's not entirely broken. Let me tell you, it is low hanging fruit to be sure. But about 6 weeks ago, Green Star Products, which is a company that's very forward thinking and very active in informing lawmakers on the reality of ethanol, they put out a series of press releases that educated legislators to the reality of ethanol, that it can be produced with cellulosic sources. wood chips, corn stalks, switchgrass. These are non-food sources, scrap, that can be turned into ethanol. And sure enough, in response to these press releases, $1.2 billion was put in the most recent energy bill for cellulosic ethanol, finally.
Wow. I wasn't aware of that. Well, maybe it's about time, you think?
It's happening. It is happening. And now the infrastructure for ethanol will have to be changed a little bit. You'll have to move up the fruit tree just a little bit. And those people that have perfected cellulosic ethanol processes, which requires a little bit more technology, are going to take the ethanol industry to the next level. And hopefully, they won't pump it into gasoline. They'll use it to produce biodiesel. Big difference in BTUs.
So it would be part of that chain then.
Yes, exactly. Instead of pouring it into gasoline where it deteriorates the fuel mileage, you can't pipe it anywhere because it sucks moisture out of the air.
Uh-huh.
Nobody likes it in fuel-injected vehicles, which everything is now,
uh-huh.
But ethanol can easily be used for trans-esterification processes to make biodiesel. It's a great process.
Huh. And therefore you wouldn't have to use as much either of the,
that's
of the
correct.
Ingredients.
Yep, that's right. You use up about 11% of by weight, and then 4% is recycled, and you get a little bit back out of the glycerin, and you're good to go. And every university just about in the country is looking for alternative uses for glycerin, which is a byproduct of the biodiesel process.
Huh. Interesting.
So there is progress being made.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, because if the route they're going and the things I've been reading, you know, and I talk to my father all the time, that's this other aspect's not working.
And, well, that's true.
Yeah. You know, my uncle was in the military. This is back in the 50s. And he was stationed down in, I believe it was Arizona, Fort Huachuca. And he tells about even back in the 50s that the military had a carburetor that could go 150 miles on a gallon of gas. And this was back in the 50s.
Yeah.
But they never allowed that to become a just for, you know, general population consumption type thing. That was strictly used in the military. Did you hear anything?
I don't know.
About
I
that?
Was in the military, and everything in there was gas guzzling. So I don't remember 100. I remember 90 miles per gallon, and we do that every year when we compete in the pulse charge race. We did about 99 miles per gallon last year.
Wow.
This year we plan on taking them on and going over 100 miles per gallon.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask one more question, and I'll take that off little line here because I'm sure maybe some other people want to call in. But where do you see our ability to sustain the economic growth of China and our insatiable appetite for our lifestyle here in America? And, of course, you have India running in that deep competition. There's three powers today as far as I see it, China, India, and the United States, and we're sliding down that scale quickly. But where do you see us as far as energy changes and for better, hopefully? Where do you see us at in the next decade to 20 years?
Wow.
I'll take that answer off the air.
All right. I'm going to defer that answer to John first, and then because I think he's got a pretty good vision, and then maybe we'll discuss it a little bit. John, your ideas?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, when we see the 20-year plan of the changes, I mean, we can start with the automotive companies, you know, constantly pushing to increase fuel efficiency. So they definitely are placing those initiatives and getting the automotive companies to, you know, to be on their toes, you know, but of course they give them 10 to 15 years to do so. You know, we've been talking about, you know, hydrogen fuel cell technology for the last 15, 20 years, and it's still 10 to 15 years out before it's being implemented. So when we look at all these changes, I mean, even ethanol itself being a first level, fuel, you know, that was grown, and now from this, you see it yourself, Brooks. So now you see that the ability of algae being grown, you know, in tanks anywhere and being fed CO2 to be converted into a fuel. You know, so there's many things that are happening in regards to a 20-year outlook. You know, we're going to see some amazing, changes. Like I said, we're already seeing them just in the electric vehicle choices that are coming out, and how many vehicles that are going to be coming out that are strictly electric or the new generation hybrids. So a lot of changes, a lot of choices that are going to be given to us. I mean, if we look at the, I do have to sometimes bring in awareness, because I'm like realizing that back in the 70s when my parents had a late 80s or 70s vehicle, Oldsmobile, with a big 455 engine, with this huge carburetor on it. Going down the highway, that thing got 18 miles to a gallon, when it was running perfectly. But now, when we look at some of the vehicles, we're still getting about that same amount. But yes, we're not burning the same amount of, at the same type of pollution. So we have so many things that we have to look at, in the aspects for cleaner air. And but the fuel choices there, we do have a lot of them that are going into implementation, and we see them all around us if we do look. My first, biodiesel is definitely the first one that's being implemented, and that's going to get increased over the years. We're going to see higher level, initiatives throughout, the countries where we're going to see that. And of course, when a lot of people don't realize, we're thinking about our vehicles as a consumer that drives to and fro work. The industry, the 18-wheel trucks, the ones that deliver all the agricultural products, those are the ones that biodiesel is going to make the difference, because they're going down our highways 24/7.
Those are the ones
that we really need to focus attention on.
This
is where biodiesel is really going to make the difference in our cleaner
air.
So that's where we really need to look. Not as like Joe consumer, myself, because we're just a small percentage. So when we look at the, of course, the harbors, we look at the possibilities there. I've been talking, to Green Star as well. I said, really focus on L.A. Harbor, with all the freight that comes in, because that's a controlled, structure. The fuel comes from one place. Imagine if you convert everything over, run that on biodiesel, we can lower, and that can show the changes that can happen on such a grand level for the cleaner air, and also the efficiency. And actually, so that, that's something that I really feel that should be focused on, is the ports themselves. Because they're controlled. They're not driving all over the place. They fill up in the same place.
You don't really have to have a gas station every, mile and a half for big rigs or for ships or for trains. People think this nation runs on gasoline. It doesn't. The world runs on diesel. That's
exactly
what moves stuff.
Absolutely.
This is really a broad question that she raised, and it kind of has three areas. There's conservation, which is an area you brought up. There's new sources of energy, which, of course, we're interested in, hydrogen, solar, wind power, water power, even getting off the grid and creating local power stations that run on something else besides the grid. But I think maybe the big question, how are we going to survive as a planet? When I fly, I notice that everybody's collected into cities, and the vast majority of this country, and most of the countries, Egypt included, is uninhabited because there are no resources there. There's no water. There's no food. There's no infrastructure. That might be the way globally we need to shift in the next 50 years. We need to shift our economics from a warlike population, and she mentioned the United States, India, and China. All three countries have an extremely sizable budget just for making war. And if we shifted that budget toward exploration of space, of inner space, of our planet, of new technologies for providing these basics, and we coupled this with some education, so that once these basics were supplied, we didn't boom like we did in the 50s and overpopulate our planet. We do it with some sense and some planning. We might survive as a species.
Absolutely. I had the privilege to show my kids the movie Independence Day yesterday. And just for, they wanted to see some of the stuff that we worked on, in my business. But I forgot about the true meaning, in that simple story, is that all of a sudden we had visitors from another planet that that were like a locust, you know, race that just wanted our extermination. And then it's through the towards the end of that movie, all the nations came together as humans, you know, for our own survival. There were no more color lines, no more politics. It was about our survival as a species.
Right.
You know, and what was amazing is that what I completely forgot that set that off is that when that movie came out, Ronald Reagan publicly made a speech saying that if we were visited and we were faced, you know, with just the defending ourselves as a race, and you know, imagine how petty our politics and our you know, border struggles would become. They'd immediately fall, and we'd all unify. So playing out that scenario in the mind is really it really takes us to another, you know, humbling or just another level of seeing,
sure,
you know, our possibility of really making a difference. You're right. You hit it on the head about, you know, the war budgets, you know, for all the countries and, you know, building nuclear weapons and, you know, standing, showing that you're part of the nuclear race. You know, so what is it going to take? Yeah, it is.
When you go to Washington and you look at the budgets, you realize presidents, at least on domestic policy, they only have control over maybe, what, 10, 11% of the budget. The rest of it's all spoken for. They have no control over that whatsoever. And the lion's share of it goes out to social programs. The next big piece goes to the military. Now, that's something a president has control over.
Yes.
And if world leaders came together and just said, hey, you know, this little blue ball is just a little too small for us to put all our eggs in. We need to learn to live together on it and then turn our sights skyward. Let's try reducing the budgets for shooting each other and try increasing the budgets for helping the race survive and proliferate out into the galaxy. Well, that kind of brings us full circle back to the question we started this hour with, this Earth-human connection. Help us understand your understanding of this, John.
Well, one of the things that I have been seeing personally in regards to this, just it being connected with this level technology that has been, you know, brought forth, I like to call it being brought forth again, not invented, because when we realize that everything that we invent or bring forth was already part of a creative process, we're just putting the pieces together, you know, and then we see, of course, when we talked about levels of technology that, you know, were created 100 years ago, but then we find out that we're finding stuff in the sand that had the exact same principles that you know, like the Baghdad battery that was found to be, you know, dated, you know, 250 BC, you know, that had the same principles as our common battery now. You know, so we're really getting into a wake-up call that we are cycling, you know, and, you know, we have the knowledge of our history to really bring us to the next level. And that's, and all this is happening, you know, is it a coincidence that we are taking this 23,000-year or 26,000-year journey around the, you know, to the galactic center? You know, we're coming into the densest part of our galaxy. You know, and this is the same thing in relations to what the Mayans talked about. You know, people see it in many different ways. But what I see it, I mean, when we really realize that we are coming into this alignment, and when we notice that there's an amplification and just in our solar activity, our sun, our earth, the planets in our solar system are changing. And we notice that things are intensifying even within our abilities. We see, you know, in the news that there's a new DNA strand that's appearing in humans. All these wonderful things that are happening, and at the same time, it's all an expansion of consciousness. So when we look at the levels of energy, you know, themselves and us finding the way to bring us to these higher levels of consciousness, you know, that's the role that I take with my technology, is to spread this worldly, you know, to raise the conscious, you know, to raise the vibration of ourselves. Now, this is a key, you know, issue within ourselves, because if we are holding what we like to call our three-dimensional selves, worrying about our bills, worrying about, what our kids are doing or what's happening down the street or watching the news, we get kind of caught up. Our minds get really obstacled. And of course, when we look at certain societies or civilizations on this planet that meditate and pray, you know, and really focus and clear their minds, clear their body, and the level of awareness that can be achieved. You know, it's really interesting when you compare the two levels, and then you come into this level of higher knowledge within ourselves and higher resonance or higher frequency when we measure our physical selves or our vibration. It gets into a really interesting, you make a career out of it, or three or four careers, you know, really putting the connections together of the Earth, you know, human connection and how we are all connected. And when it,
what causes the vibration, or what facilitates the vibration in the biological being? I mean, we understand that we are this spirit, we are this personality, the person that stares back at us in the mirror in the morning. But the biology, what is it that makes the vibration in the biology?
Well, that's a really good question, because one of the things I like to start that off with when I talk about this is as above, so below. Now, one of the things that we've realized is that in the human body, let's start with the brain, there's an amazing electrical storm that is constantly happening. Now, one of the things that we all have to realize, and science is definitely quantifying this, that we are energy, we are electricity. You know, we constantly have electrical pulses that are, you know, moving through us every single moment, you know, to keep us in physical form. Now, when we look at the brain, when we pull back and we look at it, there's a constant lightning storm happening through every center of the brain, sending these signals through the neural net, through our receptors, that cause us to think, cause us to have our personality, our emotions. Now, once we understand that, let's pull ourselves into orbit, and let's go up into the space station and point a camera down. We look at the planet, and there are lightning storms happening all over the planet. The same as in our brain. There are over 2,000 lightning storms happening on this planet as we speak. There's an incredible connection or balance that I like to call ordered chaos. You know, when we look at it, there's just this amazing amount of energy, but it creates us. It creates this balance, this beauty that we're all connected to. Now, I always like to, you know, use a scenario. If I knew exactly where a lightning bolt was going to hit precisely at what time and the exact space, I would like to be six inches away from that event, you know, just to be as close connected to that energy as possible. Because we've seen in reports of people that have been struck by lightning and survived, how it literally changes them in such an incredible way, where they become more intuitive. You know, if you survive it, you know, it's one of the key factors is getting hit in the right place. But
yeah,
it's just amazing meeting these people as well, because you can definitely feel their
from current overload.
Yeah, you don't want to, if you blow your limbs off, you know. Then,
well, the brain itself is made of cells. So what actually is the battery of the body? Where does the electricity come from in the biology to make the brain communicate, or allow the brain to communicate and allow the cells to do their electrochemistry?
Yeah, well, that's even today, you know, we're still kind of mystified by how the brain controls the body. You know, and of course we can look at it from a wiring standpoint, you know, standpoint of the distribution system, you know, but when we understand, you know, the true makeup of it, and then when we realize that everything is energy and everything is vibrating, and we have, you know, millions of neutrinos passing through us every second, you know, and, you know, when we realize that there we are connected on, you know, and towards energy, not just from eating, but there's an incredible connection that is on an etheric realm, and then even further than that. And as humans, as a species, when we really realize how connected we are to this planet, you know, and a lot of us don't really realize that until we leave the planet. I mean, from a physical standpoint, you know, in the space program, even though it is hard to get this information, is that you know, they have to use artificial standing wave generators that mimic the Earth pulse in the space flights and in the space stations to keep us in harmony out there in orbit. Because once we break the atmosphere, you know, the human body had a, you know, during the early space flights had a very hard time
it close to impossible to survive longer than 2 hours. We'd lose our functions, our abilities to think or to reason, and we literally curl up into little balls until they figured out this connection of these base frequencies that are also known as the Earth pulse or the Schumann pulse.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I was reading Dr. Mitchell's book, The Way of the Explorer. And, of course, you know, he was on Apollo 14 and spent 9 hours on the surface of the moon working and then sometimes sleeping as well. And so the moon had a different pulse to it. And the lunar lander and the lunar orbiter that they were in didn't take advantage of these Earth pulse technologies. And coming back, Dr. Mitchell had this amazing epiphany, this connectedness with everything. He became detached and disoriented and has wrestled with it for the last 30 years, trying to understand it, and created this this great book about it. So I know exactly what you're saying, that somehow the human biology, the human being, is connected with the planet Earth. And while there's an electrical storm going on inside of most people's skulls, I say most people because some people, there just aren't any lights on up there, and maybe neuroactivity that's going on the Earth right now. Maybe the atmosphere is the brain of the Earth, and, you know, these electrical storms are the way the Earth transfers information around itself. We just don't understand it. But on a cellular level, does the human battery ever get low? What happens when the voltage of the human body gets low?
Yeah, well, that's, of course, Western medicine, you know, and science also has been proving that for quite some time, that our cells lose what we couldn't call cellular voltage over the longer we live. And this has been kind of an interesting phenomenon, because that's not really supposed to be the case when we look at the way that the human body is meant to actually, it should live a couple hundred years very efficiently. You know, but we, you know, when we look at just from the basic standpoint that we have 100% of our cell voltage from when we are born to when we're about 20, you know, to 23 years of age, unless we were really rough in our college years, you know, and we do notice that. That's the reason why children heal so fast, because they have 100% cell voltage, everything is open and clear, and they're constantly in the building process and the healing process. So when we get to a certain age, like usually around, it's in our 40s when we lower, we're down about 20 to 30% of our normal cell voltages. Let's say we're about 70%. That's when we start to gather imbalances. We start to accumulate, you know, stagnant energy. Now, one of the things in my research I have noticed is that the human species takes on choices of our environment, and we've always had the ability to adapt to any environment we're thrown in. We can go to the Arctic and we figured out ways to survive. We can go to the Mojave Desert or Death Valley and we could survive. Extreme conditions, extreme changes. But we adapt to it. We figured out ways. We always figure out ways. Now, in the same type of, in our environments today, we have extreme conditions that we put ourselves through. You know, we can call that EMF pollution or RFI, you know, pollution. You know, these are just different ways we've still learned to adapt, and also the same as creating an electrical grid around the planet. You know, when we truly realize that the alternating current that was created is not exactly in harmony with who we are as living beings, it's actually, it throws us a little out of balance. I don't like to say a lot of but the thing is, even the creators of that technology came forward, and we've seen this a lot after about 20, 25 years when we apply a technology or a product. After, that's the true test, when we actually see the cause and effects that happens. And we've seen that, you know, from in our society, from asbestos to, pesticides. You know, and then after 20 or 30 years, we remove them from, anywhere near us, and we outlaw them. You know, so there are certain technologies, even the cell phone companies had to correct, because they didn't realize until they implemented a certain level of technology that it was harmful to us. And so they changed that structure. You know, instead of putting high-powered radios near our head, we use a low-power radio and we have more cell sites around us.
Right,
so there was
right.
a change, you know, so it didn't cook our tissue in our brain. You know, because 4 watts fries an egg in 5 minutes, you know, or less. You know, it's very similar to an easy bake oven. You know, a 7-watt bulb cooks that little muffin pretty quick. You know,
yeah,
so,
it does. I don't
yeah,
amazed
so,
me.
How but it's all part of our awareness. Yeah, it is. 7 watts is a lot of heat. I work with radios, you know, most of my life, you know, and 4 watts will burn your skin. It's, you know, it's amazing how much heat is there, especially in radio frequency aspects. So, you know, these are all the things that we learn, and we have the same protocols as when a new technology, something completely cutting edge, and a lot of people don't realize this, but there are companies that take these technologies, and they actually work with technologies that won't make it to the consumer for 20 to 30 years until
wow.
it's been tested and then applied. You know, I knew people who worked at these companies, you know, during my Lockheed time, and it was amazing. They said, oh, yeah, you know, I can't really talk about it, but, you know, I'm working on something that, you know, humans won't even know about for 20 years. You know, that it won't
well,
even be applied.
All this is really interesting, and what I gather from what you're saying is when we're young and carefree, our cells rebound without any problems, and we adapt to our environment without any real issue. When we're middle-aged, like 40 or 50 years old, now we've put ourselves into an environment of extreme stress. You know, we worry, and we put ourselves in situations where we have to work long hours, and we have to take care of other people. Only now our cell voltage is way down, and we can't respond to that. So it seems like there's a need for some technology to help us restore that cell voltage, help us to be able to relieve the stress from ourselves, gain some level of euphoria without drugs and without you know, some major frontal lobotomy operation. And maybe that's what you're working on. And I think what we'll do is we'll take a quick break, take about 4 minutes here at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more of John Riley, and we'll talk about the life stream generator and maybe how we can restore that cell voltage and be able to respond to our environment a little bit better. We'll be back after this. Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. And they have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPak. Click the NitroPak banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back. To X Squared Radio.
The spice is vital to space travel.
Where the past meets the future. We're here in Eastern Washington State bringing you the second show of 2008, X Squared Radio. Clear and crisp and cold out tonight. Our guest tonight is John Riley. He is the owner of Zero Point Research, and his website, I believe, is zeropointresearch.com. His technology is called the Life Stream Generator. We're going to talk about that this hour. We're coming to you via the VBS radio network, and if you are just listening to us out there and you want more content like this, of course, you can go to x2-radio.com and listen to the archives or hopefully subscribe to some of our very excellent content we've collected, or you can go to bbsradio.com, and we're also coming to you via the Steel Eye Radio Network, or Steel Eye Media, and that is steeleyemedia.com, and that is through our friend Kevin Smith, and we appreciate his network and what it has added to our audience. Anybody out there have any update on the Super Bowl? We would appreciate hearing about it. We've been talking for the last, we've been talking for 2 hours. Seems like 15 minutes. But you can reach us toll-free anywhere in U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, 877-489-6350. Anywhere on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185 or 9916. And if you're online with your long distance, you can reach us with Skype at BBS Radio or at PalTalk by using BBSRadio_com. My guest is John Riley, and the Life Stream Generator is perhaps one of the most amazing energy technologies that I have ever seen. I have personally used it. I have seen it used. And without any introduction, without any advertisement or written material or anything. We have set this equipment up, very small, very self-contained, hermetically sealed equipment. We've set it up at expo and conference after conference, and we just twist the knob and watch people come up. And it is really absolutely amazing, the things that people come back and tell us the next day. For one thing, we know when we turn this thing on the first day, the line forms rather quickly, but the second day, the line is waiting for us when we arrive. That's how incredible this technology affects the human body. John, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I'm glad you set it up that way, because I'll talk about one of my first experiences when we brought the technology public, is that I went to more like a conscious expo, and we actually had the technology that we were going to present it to the public for the first time. And some of the vendors the night before saw the unique device that I brought, and I had a very large Lemurian crystal sitting on top of it, and they started to ask me what this what it was, and I'd go to explain it. Then I would do a demonstration, and the person after their experience ran off and told two or three of his vendor friends. They came over, and next thing we know, we had this huge line the night before the show, and the security had to throw us, tell us to get out of there because they were closing. But just the next day, we already had people coming because of the vendors' experiences, and this is very transformative to me, for me, because in the 3 days when I stood there doing these demonstrations, I did energy transfers on over 139 people. And so that was really something I didn't, expect. But there was, lines, and people wanting to know more about it. We passed out brochures, and it was just an amazing experience. So we realized that we really, tapped into something pretty amazing in regards to energy and how it affects us. Now, I can immediately segue to the understanding of what when we generate radiant energy, and how it works on almost the same level as neutrinos do, but it works under what I strongly call the unified field of energy. It works within the etheric level, and I'm sure you can attest, the way that it's emitted is unlike any other technology device. It doesn't discharge. It doesn't use Tesla coil spark gap technology. We don't see it until we interact with it, and so it stays within the etheric realm, and so it actually permeates across, within a certain realm, and we can actually interact with it. And what it literally does is it brings balance within the neurological aspect of what we are. I mean, usually within 5 minutes, we just watch people just go into this calm state, some people actually go into euphoria, but we immediately see, them coming back into balance, and we do befores and afters where we see people where they are, they're holding their stuff in their face. We carry a lot of character, and when you learn to read faces, you can see where people are holding their issues or their imbalances. But then, some people walk away like they just got back from a 2-week vacation after 15 minutes in this energy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the interesting things, the term that you're bringing up is balance. I can't tell you how many people I run into who are just in their social life, in their work life, in their own personal relationship with themselves. They're off balance. They're angry, or they're depressed, or they're excited, or they're anxious. And when they're out of balance, they just don't handle life very well. So when I look at kids and I look at the way they play and they're kind of carefree and they can be enemies one day and best friends the next day, gee, if we could do that on this earth, wow, what a difference that would make. If we could just hold hands while we cross the street and share warm cookies and cold milk, that would be the peaceful life on this earth. But we get out of balance and those people are in charge, and the next thing you know, we have conflict. So do you think it's because the voltage of ourselves gets thrown out of whack by all the other energies that we're exposed to on this planet?
Yes, in so many ways, when we look at just the that level of connection in the way that we are made, because we are connected to this incredible process. I mean, when we watch a child grow, and 30 years, you know, later, they're an adult, you know, in their own lives, and you just remember them when they were a child or when you held them in their hands. So when we look at, when we just look at life from that aspect, you know, when we see the, you know, the level of, our changes within ourselves. Now, when we talk about the cell voltage aspect, there's two things that happens within the human computer. You know, and of course, you know, I mean, it's not a coincidence, you know, man created computers and they're very similar to the way we work. Now, the mind is, the processor. And then the body or the cells is our hard drive, and it stores our experiences, our emotions, you know, our stress. And this is really interesting when we actually come into that level of connection. Now we raise cell voltage back up to a healthy nominal state. If we take someone who's 45 years old, you know, and went about their normal accumulation and built up imbalances, right at the threshold of things starting to go out of cellular resonance or out of harmony, this is the time where the profound changes can really be seen. Now when we understand how cells constantly, when we have cellular turnover, and the cell, when it's about ready to turn over, mimics the cell exactly. It doesn't change a thing when a new cell comes back in. So when we understand that connection, now when we have certain subjects that are exposed, you know, in the live stream energy over a period of time, when we raise the cell voltage back up, when that cell decides to create, when it starts to go into turnover, it will mimic a healthier, stronger cell or that cell that has been raised. So what happens is over a period of time with constant exposure, periodical exposure to the live stream fields, we have noticed drastic increases in cellular energy. Now, when we see that, clinically tested, and we have this in clinics all over the world, you know, and it has been for over 2.5 years when we implemented research studies. And, we have two facilities in Paris, France that do phenomenal level research, and they literally watch, you know, they test before and after. They will actually test someone's cell voltage. They have some very sophisticated technology. And they'll also check oxygen saturation, blood pressure, heart rate. And after 15 to 20 minutes exposure in the live stream field, their oxygenation goes up, their cell voltage goes up, they are breathing a lot less, and they're calmer. You know, so when we see all these, you know, and then continued studies over 30, 60, 90 days, you know, even up to a year, the cell voltage remains. You know, so
wow.
we like to call this a human battery charger. Now,
yeah.
when we understand the way the human body works, is that that's the reason why when a child falls down and hurts itself, it's healed in like 2 or 3 days. You know, and it's like nothing. We regenerate so quickly. Now, when we get into our 40s, we don't do that as easily. When we're in our 60s, we have a lot harder healing process. That is all based on the human battery. And I like to explain that in a scenario. Just imagine if you and I, Brooks, were in charge of this power station and they gave us a power cell, you know, that ran all the facets of the station and different sectors. Now, we have one power cell that has to run this machine for 100 years. And we're sitting there in the control room, and we're sending energy down where it's needed, you know, because the we're getting signals on the board, and we're sending the signals. Now, all of a sudden, you know, the systems, we're not using a particular sector, or we're not using it as much. So naturally, to conserve energy, what would we do? We would actually, you know, trickle back the energy or shut that area down to conserve the power cell to get more time out of it. You know, so when we look at the human body the same way, our brain and body communicates with us in the exact same way. When we are in a situation where we are active, you know, we have full systems running, and, you know, we're running efficiently and keeping everything operating, but we're also oxygenating, keeping our power cell as efficient as possible. When we sit in front of a computer, you know, that the time when we get the first job to sit in front of the computer, our brain and body are communicating, realizing that we're not using everything, you know, all our systems as just like a runner would. So it starts cutting back on the energy. You know, and at the same time, when things start getting stagnant, you know, we start reaching and we start grabbing our shoulders because we're stiff. We're not getting up, walking around, you know, as much as we used to. Next thing we know, we're stiffer, you know, very stiff, and have lack of energy or lack of circulation in certain areas. So now,
well, what about when things, you know, go less than right? And let's just say they go wrong. We see individuals. I was watching a special on television the other day, and I'm not a big TV watcher. I just kind of had it on because I was seeing what the weather was. And as I was paging or passing through the channels, I crossed the I went across a channel. I think it was Discovery Health, and they were doing something called deep brain stimulation. They'd done by accident. They were doing open brain surgery on someone. And they had an electrical probe in the person's brain. They were actually trying to receive signals, but the voltage on the probe caused the patient to all of a sudden have a flood of extremely detailed memories from a long time ago in his life. I mean, the smells, the colors, who he was with. And as they increased the voltage on the probe, more and more memories started to come alive for this person. I believe that what they discovered here was that magnetic fields introduced into the brain, electromagnetic fields, repaired brain cells. It actually stimulated brain cell growth and brain cell rehabilitation, and it had profound effects on two things that have really plagued our society. One is Alzheimer's and the other is Parkinson's disease. Has the live stream generator shown any kind of promise in at least temporarily relieving the symptoms of these two diseases?
Yes, that we actually implemented a study about a year and a half ago to focus on the effects for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Now, when we understand what they stumbled on, you know, with that probe, they were actually sending energy into the brain where energy was no longer getting to. And that's the reason why all of a sudden there's a recall. You know, so now when we understand that, you know, it's like literally taking a battery charger and tapping into that particular area. And that's what that probe does. And so that's the reason why this deep brain stimulation is very effective, because they're literally sending energy where energy was having a hard time getting to.
What happens to the recall of people in the live stream field for a period of time?
Well, that's when we have Parkinson's patients that come in that have full physical, you know, whether they have the involuntary traumas in their body, usually 15 to 30 minutes of exposure, they walk out with 90% less traumas in their body. And this is like usually from one experience. We were a little surprised when that happened. We had a lady came in, she was about 74 years old, and she was at one of our open house demonstrations, and she came in and her right hand shook in front of her like she was like shaking like a spray paint can, and very large movements in her body. And she had a very good sense of humor. She said her grandson said she can like power one of those shake lights, you know, if she put it, you know, shake flashlight, you know. So she would, you know, and so we used her as a demonstration. We didn't touch her. We just put her, you know, in front of the technology, and she sat there. And, you know, after about 5 minutes, we noticed that her arm was, like, you know, about 50% less. After about 8 minutes, it was, like, you know, like, literally just a quiver. And then within 10 minutes, her arm fell to her side and was, still moving a little bit. Then within 15 minutes, she wasn't shaking at all. And she literally turned around. She goes, "I haven't stopped shaking in 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so for us, that was really big, you know, when we just saw this. And this is just from exposure, you know, to the live stream generator itself. We're not hooked up. There's no surgery involved. It's just, you know, exposure, because it works on the same level. When we understand, you know, the quantum understanding of energy and the etheric energy, the same thing as neutrinos, how it moves through every single cell. So when we have the ability to bring a unified field, you know, back into and permeate and literally have it pass through every cell, it raises the vibration, and through that, it grabs on and it literally recharges itself. It has the ability to take from this energy field. Now, we see this all the time. I mean, we've seen some people that, you know, have stagnations, and then they all, you know, after a period of exposure, they have a completely different quality of life. And this is the key. You know, of course, when we give energy back to where energy has been diminished, the human body has an incredible way of regenerating itself, like it always did. It starts to heal itself, just like the human body always did. It's just things are starting to work again. We're bringing cellular voltage back up and bringing back it up to nominal state, but we're also bringing cellular harmony back within the body. And this is key, is bringing everything, because when organs are tested, cells are tested, after a certain amount of years, a certain amount of imbalance, they are in a different frequency from a healthy cell, not just voltage. Frequency is the key behind this as well. So that's where all the other, inventors or doctors or researchers over the years were all about resonance, and they were very close to it. But the key to energy is so important. It's so important.
Well, that's one of the things that I have seen at various expos. You always hear some kind of big, static sounding thing with a bunch of electricity crackling, and you always see a crowd around these things. They look kind of scary to me. But they always operate off AC. It kind of bothers me. I mean, I get voltage like that when I step up to the television, the old tube-type televisions, or, in the back of electrical equipment. I don't think that's very healthy for the human being. What is different about the energy that your technology puts off?
Well, the radiant energy can only be generated through DC, and DC is the natural state of energy. We, as human beings, produce what's called DC current, or DC voltage. We do not create alternating current. Nothing living creates alternating current. That's man-made. You know, again, Nikola Tesla himself created that for one level of distribution of electricity and being able to harness in the power devices, for long periods of distance and efficiency. So it was brilliant in its discovery, but the human-Earth connection, if we notice in the last 100 years of its implementation, how the human body has been paying a bigger toll, sense it. I don't like to, get into details, but when we talk about that harmony, and I do harmonic tests, and I take a frequency generator, and I generate 60 hertz, or 60 cycles tone, and I hand it to people, and I say, given the choice, would you listen to that all day? And 9 out of 10 people go, no. I go, why not? They go, because I don't like the sound of it. It's very, imbalancing. I said, oh, really? I said, okay. And then after I do that test, they said, well, you've been listening to that your entire life. That's the frequency that's generated in alternating current in the northern hemisphere.
Right.
Other countries use 50 hertz. It's a lower frequency. It's actually a little bit more gentle, but when we understand the human base harmonics, the earth pulse, to all the base harmonics of what's used in, in any of the therapy devices or the ancient understandings, 50 and 60 hertz are not used at all. They're actually, they throw us out of harmony. And it wasn't understood back then, because they used 60 hertz probably just from the time reference, 60 seconds, 60 minutes. It was, an easy way of measuring and to keeping, accuracy. But then again, 20 years later, there was the cause and effects that were, noticeable.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about this human-Earth connection is that the Earth has a tremendous amount of energy that it radiates. It has the magnetosphere. There's an electrojet above our heads that moves billions of gallons of water around our whole planet up in the atmosphere. There's an ionosphere, which is highly charged. It absorbs cosmic radiation and turns it into harmless rays, or creates an ozone layer that protects us from UV. It's one of the reasons why this planet is alive in the middle of space, because it is a natural DC generator, or a very, very low frequency generator, like somewhere around 7 or 8 hertz is the natural resonance of the Earth.
Right.
So when we're detached from that, or when we artificially bathe ourselves in another frequency, we may be bringing this imbalance upon ourselves, and this may be why, at least in our high population centers, where we're generating, you know, hundreds of megawatts of energy, and we're radiating it from power lines and street lights and all kinds of electrical equipment, it may be why we're having these problems. But the interesting thing that I see in the live stream generator, and these people don't have any preconceptions. They know nothing about the technology. And there are tables and tables and tables of all kinds of new energy ideas laying around these expos and conventions that we go to. But it never fails. By the third day, there's only one line, and that's in front of the live stream generator. And it's not because it's a very slick marketing. It's sort of like, you know, popping popcorn in an airport. You're going to draw people with the smell. Well, the live stream generator, I found, just by turning it on, something, I'm not going to say subliminal, but something energetic seems to draw humans to it. They gravitate to it just like a horse would go to a clean stream in the middle of a desert.
Right. Well, one of the things that we've realized is the body and mind knows what's good for it. And when we understand the connection, just like when we go on vacation, we go to that tropical island, we go to the desert, or we go to the mountains, and after about 2 to 3 days, you notice how we disconnect, you know, we're off the grid, and all of a sudden we're more connected to the earth, and we start to relax, and we're really in the moment there.
Sure.
And if we're there for a week or two, and then we go back, and usually with about 80% of the people, I ask them this. I said, when you go back, you get back into the office where you're working again, within that first day of going back to work, what do you want to do? They go, quit. I said, right,
yeah.
Or go back to the island, right?
You know, exactly.
I said, that's your body telling you what's better for you. But we choose, I know this is harsh for a lot of people to realize, but we choose not to act on it. Our bodies and mind are constantly telling us what's good and what's bad for it. But when we get to the point of getting used to hearing the brain complain or the body complain, we tone it out. And then it becomes a chronic issue, because it compiles 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And this is where we get into true imbalance. Now, when we understand our connection, again, like I said, when we go and we walk on the beach, we put our feet in the water. You know, when we go to the mountains, I mean, we just feel wonderful up there. You know, and of course, you know, when we were, you know, in these temples in Egypt, I mean, it was just an amazing connection to source and to the earth, because of the energy out there. There's no grids out there. You know, we're in a totally different, you know, state of mind. Everything seems clearer and more precise. I mean, we're like kids, you know, out there. And then we get back here and we're slammed for like 3 or 4 days, you know, just trying to get reintegrated. You know, so when we understand these connections, but the key thing behind Livestream is that it allows us a higher quality of life. And that's the key behind it, you know, because again, when we talk about, you know, what we have built in our society, what mankind has created, we have always figured out a way to increase our survival, to figure out a way, you know, and that's one of the things I highly, you know, promote Livestream as. It's a tool, it's a balancing tool to give us a better quality of life. Because when we expose ourselves to it, it doesn't allow the imbalances to compile. It literally reduces the compiling it and raises cell voltage in a positive, healthy environment. Imbalances are close to impossible to be achieved. You know, so when we keep ourselves optimized, you know, then, you know, we're just going to live a higher quality of life.
How can people get their hands on a live stream generator or see one in action for themselves?
Well, they can visit our website at zeropointresearch.com, at zeropoint research.com. And at this point in time, you know, we do have centers that are popping up, and we're really pushing this year to get them all over the world. I'm actually working to, you know, be able to work on a rental, you know, option, you know, for the technology, and also, you know, we're working, and you know how we're working to go into mass production of this technology. And so at this point in time, we do have a limited availability of these technologies. We cannot go into mass production because of the rarity of the components, and I know you and I have talked about that before, is that, you know, the Lifestream does not use conventional technology. It uses technology that's over 80 to 100 years in our understanding. And when I show the principles of operation to most engineers, they go, well, that's not going to work. It's going to blow up. And I, you know, we have to, you know, retrain them in their educational thinking, because it does take a completely different approach to us understanding energy. And what we call the tri-field phenomenon, when we take chaos, it's almost the same thing that's happening on the planet, happening in the brain. When we bring chaos and then we hermetically seal it, from that comes unification. And it's an amazing thing to be a part of.
Well, I don't think we're going to have any trouble mass producing it. I think just because certain components are proprietary, and by the way, I should let you know, those of you around the world, whether you're in Australia, we have a lot of listeners in Australia and a lot of people in Wales. We're the number one radio program in Wales, which just surprises me, but it couldn't be because I'm Scottish, because I don't really use the Scottish accent on the air. But I can tell you that these people know truth when they hear it. And there is a way for them to get their hands on the technology. And they may, you know, at first have to come to Santa Monica, come to the facility there in Santa Monica and look at the technology, because it's getting out there. Or you can go to the website and see where John's going to be this year, and try to get a hold of the technology that way. Now, you have several models. I know you have like a Model 100, and that is sort of like for home use, for personal use. It's for, you know, 15 minutes at a time of just energy experience exposure. And then you've got some workhorses out there that can be used in a clinical or a spa kind of setting. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. Yeah, well, we have we have two models that we sell directly to the public, and that's a Model 100 and the Model 200. The Model 100 puts out 500,000 volts of radiant energy. Now, a lot of people, when they hear volts, we do have to, again, because this is such a new understanding of energy, we have to use conventional terms. So when we use voltage, you know, a lot of people think a 500,000 volts is kind of crazy to be anywhere around. But, you know, when you understand radiant energy, how, you know, you don't even know the device is on unless you interact with it or literally touch someone that's within the field. And that's where it's really interesting, when, you know, people get an incredible level of awareness to a new type of energy. So the Model 100 and 200, those are readily available to the public. The 300 is a more of our clinical device. Those are the ones that we use in the clinical type aspects, or the spa type, and that puts out 2.5 million volts of radiant energy. And then we have a Model 400 that works from one person to 100 people, and it's really great for gatherings, conscious gatherings, meditations, you know, parties, energy parties. I mean, we just have some amazing gatherings around this level energy. And then if you go to my website, you'll notice that the 400 is very unique from the three technologies prior, because the first three technologies use what's called a 90-degree dispersal of energy, where the 400 uses 360 degrees. So that is a field that constantly grows. So it's really a unique experience. So one of the things that we haven't talked about is that the level, another discovery that we created from this, or the new process, which is what we call the hands-on energy transference. And that's when we actually use ourselves as a tool, and working through the technology to our subjects, have the ability to transfer the energy through our touch. And in those experiences, it really mystifies a lot of people, is that we're not connected to anything. This is an energistic field, and we put our hand over the technology, and we have this ability with our other hand to transfer it to our subjects. And I think you've been, you know, privileged to experience that, Brooks, a few times. And
one of the things that I find unique about it, it's one thing to stand in the area of the field, and you can kind of feel when you're in it, it's kind of a bathing energy field that you feel. It's another to put your hand actually physically on the technology and feel it kind of directly going into you and bathing the cells of your body with this energy. It's quite another to stand at the end of someone else's hand who is touching the technology and actually let the energy go through their DNA, through their biology and their consciousness, and then feed into you. Now, that is quite a different experience. And I have seen nothing short of miraculous results because of that. And I'm talking psoriasis going away, tennis elbow, arthritis, eyesight improvement, unbelievable. It's almost as though it's much more than a balancing energy. It's more of a refurbishing energy, like a joining of two biologies for one healing motion. It's really incredible to watch.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing to give at the same time, and when we get to watch these transformations in people, you know, I've worked on hundreds of people, and it's just, I'm just so grateful every time I do this work with people. And it, you know, as you know, we've actually, we teach a certification course in the Lifestream hands-on transference procedures. And that is an amazing process. We're actually starting one in 2 weeks here in Santa Monica, and it's already full. And they always are. I don't even have to advertise. It's kind of amazing how this just takes its own. You know, last year we had 8 people certified. Now we have 54. So it's just really growing, and we really want to, you know, get these people out across the world, you know, and with this procedure. So it's amazing watching. It's an 8-week course, and we all meet once a week, but everyone takes home a Lifestream 100, and they all agree to use it a minimum of 15 minutes a day. Now what this does, this brings us into cellular resonance and harmony within ourselves and within the energy field that allows us to effortlessly transfer the energy through ourselves as a calibrated tool to our subjects. And it's kind of an amazing watching that transformation in the people in 8 weeks. You know, and it's just...
Now, are you considering... I know you have these courses that are 8 weeks long. Everyone gets a 100 series live stream in the course, and they can always upgrade to another piece of equipment if they want to go into direct work with others later on. But are you only doing this training course in Santa Monica? Everybody's got to come to Santa Monica, or are there plans this year of perhaps having training seminars or centers at least a couple times in other cities around the country?
Yeah, we're working on taking it to the next level as we speak. Actually, on this workshop, we're going to be videotaping it, putting it on DVD so you can actually do the home study certification. So you get the live stream, you get a DVD, you follow each week procedure that will be on the DVD, and then we'll have a 3-day intensive where everyone will come to Santa Monica to get certified. So this will allow people to come from everywhere, because we do have people in Australia, you know, with the technology, and all, you know, in Spain and France that want to understand the higher levels. So this allows us to get them certified, and then they just come out here for 3 days and walk away with their certifications and their techniquing abilities.
Now, what can someone do with this certification? I mean, they come away and say, okay, I'm now certified to work with the Lifestream technology with others. What can they do then?
Well, it allows you to, really understand this level of technology, present it, you know, at local wellness centers. You know, the nice thing about it is that we are implementing FDA studies, you know, with this technology as well, because of the neurological benefits, you know, that it does provide. And again, it's very difficult not to see them almost immediately. We have about 4 doctors that are coming on our board, you know, when we go public. You know, so there's going to be an amazing, this is creating a new, level of work that is pretty much unlike anything else at this point in time. I mean, it literally takes, subtle energy and quantifies it, you know, and now it's like everybody from, in the healing, aspects to, and the crossover between medicine is having the ability to see, you know, what the human interaction with energy fields can do within self and then with others. So we did presentations at a couple hospitals, you know, with the neurological departments, you know, and, we showed the benefits, and it was just an amazing, response. So we're very excited on where it's going. And again, like I said, we're very careful to make our slow steps of introduction, you know,
yes.
of this level of technology. We're not here trying to, you know, we want to work with and implement in, you know, where it's going to do the most good, you know, and so that we're real excited about, you know,
sure.
the way that we use our insight to take the steps, the appropriate
now,
steps to see this.
You say that the training course that's coming up in a couple of weeks or next month is sold out. How often do you have these each year? And how do people get their names on the waiting list for the next training course?
Yeah, well, they can contact us over at Zero Point Research, and they can just send us an email saying that they're interested in doing the workshop. And, you know, we do have people come from, you know, like the Bay Area and San Diego, and they just fly, they were flying down literally every week for this, and it was amazing. And we had such a big response. We used the larger facilities in Long Beach where we had 23 people, you know, in the workshop. We don't do them very big because we like to keep them intimate. You know, and, you know, keep everyone as, you know, as a group, you know, because then we all work, you know, work with each other.
Sure.
You know, so, yeah, but, you know, once we get, you know, you need about a year, you know, behind it to really, to train, because then I have a few people that are getting close to emerge, and then we can go to the East Coast, and we could do a workshop, and we could, you know, go, you know, to Florida or wherever it's needed, because I can send other people, as well as myself traveling.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. So yeah, we're really excited on where it's going. You know, it's just and you know what people are getting from it and the level. Like I said, this level of certification when you go to an expo and you just like you did, you just you know turn it on and watch what gathers. It's an amazing experience.
It is. It is really amazing, and we just kind of. Live through the experience. We're not manipulating it. We're not making it happen. We're not putting up any banners or any signs. We just, it's a very unassuming piece of technology. It doesn't come in a bright colored box. It doesn't have any huge blinking lights on it. It doesn't put off any odor. But for some reason, when you give that timer a twist, it's just really phenomenal. You get a party of people that show up at your table, and they want to know what's going on. They want to know why they feel so good all of a sudden. I think you have some people that work with the technology in their normal business. They just have it as an atmospheric enhancement. And I think there was a certain hairdresser that you had that had the technology in their shop. And somebody famous in Hollywood, because this is no ordinary hairdresser, sitting back in the chair, relaxing, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden she just says, "Did something just happen? Because I really feel good. What's going on in this room?" That's a pretty amazing story. I may have told it all. Is there anything more that I've left out?
Yeah, she just said, you know, all of a sudden the room got filled with love, you know, and she just felt so good. So that was just an honor to hear that. And, you know, we get some wonderful stories. I think you've seen a few people, you know, really respond in a level of excitement and tell you, you know, how they feel and also start connecting the dots to certain things. So that, you know, that's kind of amazing. And, you know, we do have, you know, a few people that I call that are on the journey, you know, that take the 8 weeks, you know, they have a live stream and they agree to use it every day. You know, and we have some very high-level spiritual people, you know, very famous people working with it on a daily basis, talking about how, you know, it really connects them within their meditation. And so it's really, you know, like I said, we're just really excited because, you know, we're about ready to launch a newer level technology that works with 1,000 people, you know, in large
wow.
facilities. So, yeah, that one's going to, I'm real excited
that's
to bring that forward.
That's enough to bring about world peace if we can ship those to a...
That's the key. I mean, when we're talking about world peace, and you know, my vision is unification, and unification comes from bringing people into balance. And I really feel everyone on this planet deserves to really understand what balance means in the mind, because we don't realize because we have embedded so many beliefs, so many imbalances. In our receptors, in our neurological pathways, where we don't understand it until we are truly exposed to it again. there we can take a balanced perspective on what we are doing, what we are living, you know, what we're involved in our lives. And it gives us a second chance to see things with new eyes.
What would it be like to bring some of the troubled areas of our planet back into balance? What would we realize as a race?
Well, I think we're going to realize this because this is a world vision that is, I feel, again, like I said, this is a gift that is deep inside me that I really feel that, I'm already seeing the outcome. I mean, when we start with just a small amount of people and we understand how, you know, you've seen it yourself, how one person will spread the word and then bring back three, and then that person will bring back two or three, and then next thing you know, you're spreading this consciousness, you know, or a deeper connection to what we are really connected to. And everyone is entitled to that. Everyone.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I just the future looks very bright for Zero Point Research, and we certainly are pleased to have John on our program tonight. Such engineering reaching its point of use, shall I say. We see engineering misapplied in our planet plenty of times. Sometimes we go and we see ancient civilizations and we see blatant overuse of technology for the most frivolous reasons. But occasionally we see a match of intelligence and aptitude, of skill sets and equipment exactly where it needs to be. I think this is one of those cases. And I can tell you it's my pleasure to know about Zero Point Research. And at least as far as this program is concerned and this engineer, we intend to help John and his company as much as we can. And we appreciate you all listening. We know many people didn't call in tonight, maybe because a little bit too much Super Bowl frivolity. But tomorrow when you're at work and you're turning that workstation on to do your daily duties and you tune in to X Squared Radio to listen to this archive, and many people do, and throughout the week we probably stream about 3 gigabytes a day of this program. We want you to pay attention to this one, and if it resonates with you, go ahead and go to zeropointresearch.com. Check it out. See if having this kind of energy source in your office or your home, or even if it resonates with you to become a worker in this technology, check it out and see if it works for you. John, as always, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, and hope that we're able to get together in the next couple of weeks and see if we can take this to another level.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It was an honor to be on.
My pleasure. And we'll say goodnight to you then. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
All right, my friends, that is the February 3rd edition of X Squared Radio. This is a 3-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, make sure to let us know. Contact us at info@x2-radio.com, and we'll do the rest. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.